Aloha, everybody. Welcome to Taste of Compassionate Leadership on NVC Academy. This is Jim Mansky. Today, our class is called From Flipping Your Lid to Flipping the Script. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute, where that title comes from. I think it'll be very clear to you by the end of the call. What we're planning to do today is have a couple of brief lessons, one on flipping your lid and one on flipping the script. There's really enough material here for two calls, but I just thought it would be fun to try to put them together and show how NVC can be very supportive. We have two brief lessons, chances for you to connect with each other in a pair, likely a dialogue, and then at the very end of the call, we'll have an opportunity to hear from as many of you as we can to find out what you're taking away from the call. Again, really welcome to the call. We're going to do what we call a self-connection exercise. Self-connection just means an opportunity to practice the skills and the consciousness of nonviolent communication just with yourself, without another person being there. Marshall once called self-empathy the most important application of nonviolent communication. So this is a chance for you to practice it together. Whether you've never done it or not, it doesn't really matter, because you're actually doing it all the time. And this is just bringing awareness to what you're already doing all the time. So if you're the kind of person that likes to take notes and you have a notebook with you and a pen and all that, or a journal, you can just put that aside for right now and just relax. Get yourself comfortable. Check in with your body to see if your body needs anything to be comfortable for about 7 or 8 minutes. And listen to your body. See if you can fulfill your body's requests if it works for you. And then to practice what we nickname the zero step, what happens before we practice NVC, the whole focus on our intention for our practice. What's it about for you? Why do you want to try the self-connection practice? And then from that place of being more connected to your intention, just open your senses. Allow yourself to notice what you are perceiving of the world right now. Obviously, you're hearing the sound of my voice. Maybe there's other noises or sounds in the space that you're in. So simply just listen to sounds that are available. Listen with a sense of effortlessness. You don't have to try to listen. You just allow yourself to be able to listen. You might notice as you simply listen to the sounds available that something else might be happening as well as just listening. You might also be commenting to yourself about the sounds that you hear. And notice that you're listening to that too. So it's still a part of what we're listening for. You can listen to external sounds in the world or internal dialogue. The same consciousness is present for either. And then there may be other senses that you could tune into. Obviously, there's five of them, so you could also notice what you see. You could notice what you're touching. You could notice any aromas. There may be a lingering taste in your mouth. And often accompanying each perception, there's a thought that goes with it. It might be a thought that you like it or you don't like it. It might be just a naming or a labeling. It might be a moral judgment that it's right or wrong or good or bad. That's all really human. And you just allow that to happen as well. Then notice you can not only change channels among the various things that you could perceive, but you could also change what you're paying attention to by noticing sensations inside the body. So as you place your attention on sensations, what do you notice? First time people hear that instruction, sometimes they just say, huh, I don't notice anything, and that's fine. And you just don't notice anything. That's okay. That's your report to yourself. I don't notice anything. Or maybe you notice a sense of numbness. That's a feeling too. I'm not aware of feeling anything. I feel numb. Or perhaps you notice a sense of pleasure in your body. Relaxation or openness or ease. Or maybe you notice pain. There are two fundamental sensations, pain or pleasure. And notice that pain and pleasure are just labels that we are adding on top of the sensations. And sometimes we can get pretty fancy with our labeling, and we can take a particular group of sensations and call it anger, or fear, or anxiety, or disgust, or something else. Emotions are flowing through our experience all the time, and sometimes we pause and name them for ourselves. So try that for yourself. What do you notice right now in terms of your emotions? And whatever you find in terms of feelings, make an inquiry. What's this feeling? Imagine that the feeling that you're having is like a signal. It's like a light on the dashboard of your car. And it's telling you something. It's telling you that something is important to you. Either it's an acknowledgement of something important has happened that you like, that's pleasure. Or it's an acknowledgement that something's happening that's painful. Something's important here that's not being addressed. What is it? What is it for you right now? What's really important to you in this moment? It's pointing to what we call a need in NVC. Those elements of universal energy that all of us share. It's the pathway we often use in NVC to connect with others or with ourselves. We find out what's important to us, and knowing that we share it, it allows us to enjoy a sense of connection. And as you sit with that energy, maybe there's an idea of how you could contribute to that energy right now in your life. Maybe there's a step that you could take right now that could support your well-being. Just to give you a quick example, if you noticed you were thirsty, that's a feeling. You follow that feeling to your need. You have a need for some water. How could I get some water? Well, I could just walk over to the sink or reach over to my water bottle. Or whatever it is, some sort of a strategy then might pop into your mind, make your life more wonderful, and get you the water you need. So that brings to conclusion our self-connection exercise. Take a moment now and just notice where you're at. Just take a breath, and we'll go into a little brief content area. I'm going to give credit here to Dan Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L. I learned about Dan's work from my friend and fellow trainer, Sarah Payton. She taught me what she learned from Dan or through Dan, and it's called the hand model of the human nervous system. I'm going to teach it all to you right now. And I have found it remarkable just to have this basic brain science and to realize that it's literally in the palm of my hand whenever I need it. And it's particularly useful to explain it to your partner, to your romantic partner if you have one, or explain it to your kids as a topic of conversation, maybe with coworkers, because it can really illuminate what is naturally occurring in our lives every day, and it can give some opportunity for compassion for what it's like just to be a human being and to have inherited the hardware that we have, which is our human nervous system. So I'm going to give you a really brief lesson. I've never done this without you actually being able to see my hand, so it's going to be interesting, but I bet every single one of you has one. So just look at your hand right now and just kind of get familiar, maybe choose one hand or the other to focus on. Notice that if your palm is open and facing you, that you could trace a line from the tip of your middle finger right down to your elbow. Then go down to where your elbow is and imagine that's the base of your spine. And that if you traveled up the spine to the middle of the palm of your hand, imagine that that's actually a part of your brain that is the deepest, oldest, most ancient part of our brain. And it's the spinal cord and the vagal nerves, some of these really basic parts of the nervous system. And they are responsible for things that you don't have any control over or very limited control, like your heartbeat. It's making sure that your heart is beating regularly, that you're breathing even without choice, so that if you fall asleep, you'll continue to breathe. It's regulating your body temperature, all your digestive processes. It's acting as a kind of a nerve center, literally, for all your other systems to make sure that all your systems in your body, your digestive system and your respiratory system and all these other parts of us are all working in harmony with each other. So that's right there in the middle of your hand. And it's also the place where some real familiar reactions that we often have occur, the ones that are really beyond our control, like fight, flight, freeze. So these are so deep in us that we have very little choice over how they come on and under in what circumstances. And that's why we end up getting into some severe sort of situations like rampages and places where people are at riots, and we just start feeding off of each other's nervous systems because we're behaving from this really deep place where the only need that is alive for our organism is safety. We want to make sure that we're safe and that we're alive. This is all about survival. And so then now if you just take your thumb and fold it and put it into the center of your hand. So now it's like you're saying, I'm 4 years old. You might imagine that you have four fingers up and then your thumb going across inside the middle of your hand. Now your thumb is representing kind of the mammalian part of your brain. It's a much newer part than that first part that we talked about. And this mammalian part of the brain is really important for how we sustain relationship, because it's where we begin to make what are called limbic bonds. So the limbic system is a part of this thumb area of our brain, and it's letting us know who we're attached to in a positive way and who we're not attached with or to yet. So we feel that. It generates feelings in us, either comfort because we're around people that we're attached to and that we feel safe with, or less than comfortable. Maybe we even feel anxious or scared or something like that if we're with somebody that we're not familiar with. That's also then the source of where much of our memory is regulated, is in this middle part of the brain. And so, of course, you couldn't relate to somebody unless you had a memory of them. And so now all these systems are wired up, and with that first part of the brain, the vagal nerve and the central nervous system, the spinal cord and so forth, and the brainstem. And so all that is all connected. And if you were your cat, that's all you'd have pretty much. You don't have a whole lot of cortical matter. We're going to explore that next. But here in this limbic system, it's also where we have some influence over how we regulate ourselves. Our bodies have a tendency to want to go back towards calm and alert, because it takes a lot of energy to stay in an anxious, stressful state. So the body has a natural tendency to want to get back to calm and alert. So we'll actually be utilizing that to our advantage here. Now, if you take your four fingers and wrap them over your thumb, now you've got kind of like it's almost like a fist, a soft fist, but your thumb is in the middle of the fist. And so your fingers wrapping over indicate the cortex of the brain. This is the wrapping that is over these core components that we've already talked about. This is the human part of our brain. We share it with some other primates, some parts of this part of the brain we have with the great apes and maybe with some other animals as well. But we have something that nobody else has. If you look at your hand and you kind of look down at your first knuckles just above your fingernails, that's the prefrontal cortex. And this is a uniquely human, as far as we know. It's a uniquely human part of the brain. And this is where NVC happens. You have two of these, a left brain and a right brain. And by utilizing and learning more about NVC, you learn to bring these two brains, the left brain and the right brain, both the left prefrontal cortex and the right one, into a kind of harmony. And that harmony is achieved through self-empathy, self-connection, mindfulness practices, other things that cultivate your own well-being, all help to support the well-being of your prefrontal cortex. And if your prefrontal cortex is happy and healthy, guess what? Everything underneath it is happier and healthier because it is completely, intimately, seamlessly connected to those other parts of the brain. So when you're awake, alert, well-fed, well-rested, in a state of mindfulness, and something happens, you notice maybe something going off at the core of your body, and you have this observational awareness that we played with in the first exercise. So you then can support yourself in regulating yourself. You can choose to take a deep breath, take a walk. You can choose to investigate what you sense might be a threat, something like that. So you can use all your human parts of the brain without just running out of the house just because a floorboard creaked. You didn't run out of the house out of fear. You actually went to investigate what the floorboard creak was, and you found out that maybe your kid was awake and you didn't know your kid was awake walking in the house or whatever it was. And so that's one way of kind of helping yourself to regulate your emotional system. When you go off and you notice it, that's where all of your NVC practices can help you come back into a state of calm alert. But sometimes, and I just allow your whole hand to kind of explode a little bit, keeping your thumb there, and let your fingers kind of explode upwards, and that's flipping your lid. And this is where you actually lose contact between your prefrontal cortex, your human part of your brain. You flip your lid, and you actually become temporarily a mammal, another kind of a mammal that doesn't have any access. All you have is your instincts, your fight, flight, freeze instincts, and you have some basic kind of strategies to try to deal with the conflict involving fight and flight and so forth. And you might also be remembering how this person has offended you in the past, and you're going to build your case against them and so forth, and you can move towards violent behavior, either in speech or with words, when you flip your lid. And so noticing that you flip your lid is a really critical key component, because once you notice it, now that you notice it, the next time you flip your lid, you're going to think about your hand. And you're going to think, wow, I just flipped my lid. Just by noticing you flipped your lid, now you take your fingers and you wrap them over your limbic system again. Just by noticing you flipped your lid, you're no longer in a flipped lid state. You've changed everything just by noticing, by being able to make the observation of how you're feeling in the moment, that you've gotten emotionally hijacked or whatever it is, freaked out. Now you have engaged the cerebral cortex of your brain again, and now you have access to all your skills, all your consciousness. You can start coaching yourself back to more awareness. So that's the hand model, and I'm going to invite you just to sit with yourself for just a moment and think about it. Think about what you just heard from me and see if it makes sense to you. See if there are any questions that arise in you that you need right now for clarity before we move into the next exercise.
I was just wondering, this whole thing was metaphoric, right? There is nothing in the fingers that relates to the brain.
It's all metaphoric. That's correct. That's
okay.
Right.
All right, great.
I mean,
it is
connected. It is connected, but it is a metaphor. Thank you for the clarity. Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you for asking. And next question.
I've heard a similar model from Sarah Payton, and I think that the thumb represents the amygdala. Is that also true here?
The amygdala is part of that whole mammalian brain. It's an amygdala, limbic system, reticular activating system. There's several components of that, but yeah, that's all part of that kind of emotional processing part of the brain.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for asking. The next question.
I often think of myself as having that as a chronic situation where the lid is flipped. And simply because I'm not a good critical thinker, I can get easily triggered. So I lost it somewhere between where you talked about the emotional brain and the thumb representing and the amygdala and primitive memories. I know the next part was when we folded the hands over. That's all about the prefrontal cortex, the reasoning part of the brain. I've heard all of that and read of that. However, I couldn't get when you had us lift our fingers up and then I brought them back down, like I didn't really get the sense okay, I'm going to be, knowing how easily I get nervous and can't think straight, can't think on my feet, that I don't know that it's as simple as that, you know?
Yeah. You're really wanting some understanding of it, especially given maybe the way you've been educated as a human being and some of the life experiences that you've had. You're noticing that you're like in a chronic state of having your lid flipped. And
well, yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of humor or exaggeration.
Sure.
I'm not sure, but it was just one way of saying a lot of times I don't feel like I'm walking around like this rational person. You know, everybody, I know what my emotions are, but my brain is sitting over the top of that and I'm in control. So these are just quick words. I don't want to, I'm a little scared. I don't want to take up too much time and I don't know that I could get clarity anyway.
I think it's a really great question and I want to address it. I think it's probably if it's alive in you, it's alive in other people as well. And I want to be very clear that just knowing this model and now knowing that kind of what's going on in your brain, that's not going to cure it. It's not going to keep it from going away. In fact, we wouldn't want it to go away because sometimes it's really, really important that we have these emotional reactions. What is important is to begin to cultivate a little bit more choice. If you even had 1% more choice, if all of us had 1% more choice about our reactivity, we would have at least 1% more peace on the planet, and that would make a difference, and that would give us a foundation to build on. And so being aware of it is one thing, and then being aware that you've lost it is a really important skill. We'll be working more with that today. And also, just to let you know, there's some really good research about how all of us can support ourselves in getting more closer to this choice. Dan Siegel, the man that I mentioned earlier, that is the source of these ideas about the hand model and how to express it, he uses this to teach children and parents. So both parents and children understand what's going on in their nervous systems. And because we have such a powerful prefrontal cortex, this intellectual understanding is a step in the right direction for having more choice. And then we can support our prefrontal cortex and our whole nervous system with some practices, some mindfulness practices. There's 1,000 of them to choose from. Everything from classic meditation, you know, watching your breath and so forth, to mindful walking, to mindful eating. Just do a Google search on mindfulness and you'll find 1,000,000 supports for becoming more aware of what's going on in our bodies. And for me, NVC is a spectacular mindfulness process because it's intimately connected. The NVC skills, especially the ones around observation, noticing what's going on in our bodies, what's going on in our feelings, are very much related to supporting ourselves and having more skill about regulating our emotion. It's not going to happen overnight, but it does happen over time. And every time you practice, it makes it easier to do next time. Dan's way of expressing that is what fires together, wires together, and what wires together, fires together. So by us doing conscious practices, like NVC practices, we're actually building new nerve pathways in our brain that support us so that the next time we flip our lid, we have a nanosecond head start on coming back to resiliency because of all of the previous practices that we've done. So let me just check in and see if there's anything left before I move on to the next question. Anything you want to say in response to what I've said?
No, I think that's good. I like the idea of hearing at NVC. I guess I kind of knew it on some level. Mindfulness is not necessarily mindfulness, but mindfulness is taking place by practicing NVC. I like that. And I appreciated your explanation. Thank you.
I think there's one more question on the board here.
So I just need you to verify that there's no changing this vagus part of ourselves that has the flight, fight reactivity. That's just going to keep happening.
Forever, thank goodness. Otherwise, the only alternative that we know of is death. So what we can do, we can't control these reactions, but we can begin to influence them. We can influence them.
I just thought we got to a state where they actually went away, but they don't go away.
I doubt it. I'm basing my current, I'd love to be wrong about this. I'd love for them to go away in a way. But I mean, I really rely on my vagal nerve to, you know, there's actually 3 of them. There's the frontal vagal nerve, which is probably the one that's most activated in all of us right now, the ventral vagal nerve. And it's the one that kind of supports a calm and alert. And so that's going on right now. And if suddenly there was an unexpected threat that arrived, I would certainly want the rest of my vagal nerves to be working, because I want to be able to have those in my back pocket, both flight and fight. I can imagine times when, if I was confronted with a shark, if I was out snorkeling or something like that, I'd want to have that ability to be able to fight off an attacker like that. And so I wouldn't want that to go away, but I do want to have more choice about when it's activated and what I do when it's activated, because I don't want to confuse my bride, Jory. I don't want to confuse her with a shark. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I think she's trying to attack me when she's actually just asking me to pass the salt or something like that. And some kind of ordinary event is misinterpreted by my nervous system. NVC has given me massive support in order to be able to come back to a sense of calm and alert and then navigate the conflict with Jory or with somebody else. So I don't think the reactions are going to go away, but I'm learning how to utilize those reactions in the service of connection. So let me just find out how that is for you to hear. Anything you want to say in response to that?
Thank you. I just need to hear it again and again, and that was very helpful. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. It seems to be part of our human equipment, the whole nervous system. And working with Sarah and with other trainers who are exploring the nervous system and how it interacts with NVC has been very helpful for me in growing my compassion, both for myself and my reactivity, and increasing my compassion for others, because we all have the same basic equipment. It's another part of our universal connection. And there's one more question on the board.
I'm really grateful for this. I love the experiential quality of learning NVC, and when I start to hear a lot of the science behind the mind, there's a part of me that just turns off, stops listening. However, when you started with this so experientially, I got hooked, and I realized, oh, actually, this is really interesting, and it is applicable, and wait, listen, pay attention. So because I'm challenged to take in intellectual information when I'm so heart space connected, I was wondering if you would be able to provide some kind of written information, just because I wasn't able to take in all of maybe the really helpful intellectual information because I was just so invested in the experience. But because of it, I was able to realize there's a lot of value in it.
I'm so excited to hear that. Yes, I'll send out a handout that has some links on it, including links to Dan Siegel doing the demonstration so you can actually see it, and that'll reinforce what you learned here today, and then you'll be able to share it with friends as well. And from those links, you can go about as deep as you can go. You can become basically have the equivalent of a medical education with the way the internet is designed today, and that's how I've done it. I just do it one little interesting step at a time. And Sarah's website, which is empathybrain.com, Sarah has a continuous stream of very interesting articles about the nervous system. Most of them are way, way, way too technical for me. But every once in a while, there'll be something in there that just piques my interest and I'll learn something about myself. And she has a way of being able to translate all these extremely arcane and complicated scientific principles into the simple everyday NVC that's been very helpful for me. So I'll be happy to send those along to you. Okay, so that clears the board. We can dive into the second half of the call. The best is yet to come, because now we're going to bring in the alternative to flipping your lid. I share the morning. I hear the morning that I heard when someone mentioned a minute ago, isn't this ever going to go away? These reactive patterns are so painful for us, and they impact the people that we love the most. And if there was a way, they would go away, and it seems like it would make it so much more wonderful. Well, like I said, I doubt that they're going to go away, but we can learn to utilize them in the service of connection. So that's what we're going to do next, is figure out how can we use NVC to use this flipping the lid phenomenon that probably happens to us, maybe even once a day. Or I remember when I had little kids in the house, I'd flip my lid way more than once a day. And I know some people have really stressful jobs and stressful relationship issues going on. And so flipping your lid is a kind of a common occurrence. And sometimes it can kind of seem like it's overwhelming. And that might even be what drives us to start exploring NVC and other mindfulness support systems so that we can begin to gain more facility and ease in navigating what happens when we flip our lid. So for this part of our class, it's going to be helpful if you have something to write on and write with. because you'll be doing some writing along to answer some questions. This will be good because it'll give you a guideline, so when you get the handout later, you can kind of see where I was pointing to with these questions, and you can guide yourself through it again later, or maybe guide other people through it in a practice group. Please take everything that we teach you here on Taste of Compassionate Leadership and spread it around and play with it and change it and make it your own. So this part was inspired by a podcast that I listened to the other day. It's a relatively new podcast that I've only been listening to for about a year, and there aren't even that many episodes yet. But I learned something every time I listen to this particular podcast. And now you're all on the edge of your seat saying, when is he going to say what the name of this podcast is? Sounds like a really juicy one, and it's called Invisibilia. If you imagine the word invisible, and you add ilia to the end of it, invisibilia. So it refers to all the things that influence human behavior that are invisible. And in this particular episode, it was talking about expectations and how this invisible force is inside of us and how we can notice our expectations, and then we can, through that, the simple act of being able to make a clear observation, we can observe our expectations, and then we can make magic happen. I'm going to tell a couple of stories that indicate this idea about flipping the script. So that's the phrase that we're going to use to kind of point to this concept of having more choice in a situation than there is now, a choice that allows us to get more needs met at less cost. A choice that didn't seem to be available before because we were simply unconscious of it. And by utilizing some simple NVC, we can become more conscious of that which we were not conscious of before and use that new insight to navigate the conflict that's right in front of us. And so imagine this real typical summer scene. And this is, I'm just going to rip this right out of the story from the webcast because it moved me so much. Imagine you're hanging out in the backyard with your friends. It's a summer evening, and there's eight of you gathered in the backyard, and you're just having fun. You've had a barbecue, and you're sharing. Someone brought, you know, a stash of wonderful French wine, and no, I'm not a drinker. I know a lot of people enjoy that, and so you're in the backyard enjoying this. It's been going on for a couple of hours, and it's almost like a moment of perfection. And then suddenly, out of the corner of your eye, you notice, coming clearly now into your view, is an arm. It's an unfamiliar arm, an arm you've never seen before. And at the end of the arm, there's a gun. And now there's a gun that has somehow arrived at your party in your backyard. And you follow the gun in shock. It's like everything's going in slow motion. Your brain has now shifted into survival mode, so it's expanding each moment of time so that 1 second crawls along so that your body has time to react to what's going on. This is why we would never want these vagal impulses to go away, because sometimes these things happen in our lives. And your eye follows the hand with the gun up to a face, and you tune into this face, and it's an angry-looking person. And the person is, you now tune into their voice, and what you hear is the person is saying, give me all your money or I'm going to start hurting people. So just imagine that this is happening, and the reaction that you have in your body. And, of course, the reaction is going to happen. There's fight maybe coming up for some of us. There's flight coming up for others. Some of us are frozen. We're like deer in the headlight. We have no idea what to do. All these reactions are in the service of safety and survival. And in this particular case, what happened is nobody did anything. They all kind of got frozen. And the reason they got frozen was they couldn't comply with the request that was made with the person who had the gun. Nobody had any money. And so their first thing that came out of somebody's mouth was they tried shame. They utilized their words. Now, this is violence in a way, but it's a lot better than fight in the way that I line up the universe. And this person just tried to say, what would your mother think of you coming here with a gun and trying to rob innocent people? And this did not work. This strategy did not work. It actually inflamed the situation, as you can imagine, because the gunman reacted in what's called a complementary fashion. Not like I'm going to give you a compliment, but like one thing goes with another, one thing complements another. And so when he heard this shameful reaction, he reacted with more anger and more rage. He said, I don't even have a mother. My mother's dead, and even if she was, she would never care. You know, so this strategy did not work. And then a woman said to the man, you know, we don't have any money, but what we do have is wine. Would you like to have a glass of wine? There was complete silence. It was another moment of everybody, including the gunman, now being a deer in the headlights. This was not expected. This was a demonstration of what's called non-complementary behavior. This is the opposite of what the gunman was expecting, to be invited in, to be included. And he said, yeah, sure, okay, I'll have a glass of wine. And then what ensued was a brief conversation about how enjoyable the wine was. Then the man looked at everybody and he said, I think I'm in the wrong place. And he took his wine glass, he turned around, and he left. After some time had went by and they did a little dinner party, was like processing their experience, they went out and started cleaning everything up and getting ready to go to bed and so forth. And they found the wine glass just outside the gate of their backyard, neatly put where it would be easily seen, not smashed, not broken, not hidden, not stolen, just left. So this is a fantastic example of flipping the script. My friend Hawkeye, and Hawkeye's an NBC trainer, and he's known Marshall for even longer than I have, and he was traveling with Marshall once in Israel back in the 90s, and at this particular place, wherever they were in Israel, everybody had a gun. Everybody was packing heat. Marshall was commenting on this. He was, you know, noticing that everybody had a gun, and they were connecting about it. And then Marshall said, I'd rather have NVC than a gun. And I think it's true for me, too. I'd rather have NVC than a gun. Because although a gun might have some protective ability in certain circumstances, I've never been trained in how to use one, and I'm sure it'd be worse for the situation if I had a gun than if someone who was well-trained. But I do have NVC. I am well-trained in NVC. And although I've never confronted that kind of violence before, I'm pretty sure that it would be better that I had NVC than I didn't. So let's find out if that's true for you. And so in order to do that, I'd like you to consider something from your own life that you would consider a stuck place. And what I mean by stuck place, you're involved with another person and you've had kind of an ongoing conflict and you haven't figured out a way to navigate this conflict. So it's kind of a stuck place. So I don't want you to choose a force 5 hurricane. I want you to choose just a minor thunderstorm of a conflict. Something with a scale, if it was a 5-point scale and 5 was the worst, choose a 1 or a 2. As you comb your memory or your imagination for one of these situations, just write it down. Write down one sentence that describes a situation where things seem a little bit stuck. It might start out not such as a clear observation. It might start out as a lot of judgment, and that's okay. That's because we just have this nervous system that we have. And so you might actually be utilizing your prefrontal cortex to make judgments because that's something that we've been educated to do very, very well. So, for example, the first thing when I asked you to think about a conflict was you thought something like, my kid's disrespectful. My kids won't respect me. They're completely uncooperative. So it might start with that kind of a judgment. That's okay. Just be with that judgment. Just listen to it with a sense of acknowledgement. And think of one particular moment when you had that judgment. Rather than doing it as a general thing, my kids are always uncooperative or whatever, think of one specific time when you had that judgment and write that down. So maybe it comes out like, I asked my kid to brush their teeth at a time we had agreed, but they continued to do whatever they were doing instead. So let's move on. Now we're going to actually do what I practiced a moment ago. Go ahead and write down whatever you're telling yourself about the situation. Just take 1 minute and write down all your thoughts without any sort of censoring about this particular situation. You won't have to share this with anybody. It's just for the exercise, for you. So the next step is to acknowledge yourself for what you wrote down. So in other words, this is a chance for you to just practice a real basic self-empathy skill. And so the idea here is to simply acknowledge what you're telling yourself. I'll give you an example. Going to this toothbrushing example, what I'm telling myself about this, if I behaved like this when I was a kid, I would have been spanked. My kids don't know how lucky they are. So if I wanted to acknowledge that for myself, one thing that I could say is you're choosing to be a different kind of parent than you had. So just to name whatever your experience is, see if you can find a way just to name your own experience without any kind of judgment about it. So maybe you would acknowledge the wish. Or maybe you would just simply acknowledge the thought, oh, you're thinking those thoughts right now. It's as simple as that. It's not a complicated skill. You're simply naming for yourself what's actually happening. Now, as you do that, as you name what's going on, feelings, you'll begin to become aware, you can become aware of feelings in your body. When we talk to ourselves in these painful, jackal-y ways, it tends to create certain feelings in our body of anger or shame or guilt or depression or anxiety or something else. So just notice the feelings that are arising in you when you talk to yourself that way, when you're confronting this situation in your life. It's natural for human beings to have feelings. So just notice them. If you don't have the words to describe it, you can just use two, pain or pleasure. Start there. I'm feeling pain. Or I'm feeling okay. But just be honest with yourself and acknowledge the sensations and emotions that are arising in you. And say it to yourself with warmth. So in other words, if I notice that I'm tense or frustrated, because I really want my kid to brush their teeth here, I could meet myself with, oh, there you are, being tense and frustrated about something you've got no control over. That's not what I'm talking about. That is not a warm acknowledgement. What I'm talking about is, oh, this has happened so many times for you. You're really feeling some frustration. It's really tense for you right now. Your jaw is really tight. Your head is spinning. Telling yourself you don't know what to do. You just know you don't like it right now. So talk to yourself like that for a minute. So that's step two. First step is just to be aware of and write down the observation. Second step, what you're telling yourself. Third step, what you're feeling. In both those cases, what we're doing with either what we're telling ourselves or the feelings that are arising in us is we're meeting ourselves with warmth and acknowledgement. Warmth and acknowledgement. That opens the door for the fourth step. It's like a question you could ask yourself. What are these feelings telling me is important to me right now? If these feelings were like the light on the dashboard of my car, what would they be pointing me to pay attention to? So as you ask yourself this question, that is a deepening of your self-empathy simply by becoming curious about what these feelings mean. You're deepening your self-empathy. You may not have an answer to the question. The empathy is in the asking. What's important to me here? Some of you might have an answer. Some of you might not yet have an answer of what your need is. The longer you do NVC, it seems like the more facility, the more ease there is in being able to find words that we can attach to these life energies that are in us. Like in my situation with trying to get my kid to brush his teeth, probably guessed before I did. It's around ease and cooperation. I just want ease and cooperation. So if you know what you want, just kind of be with that and see if you can narrow it down just to one word, one or two words, like ease and cooperation. And then just sit in the energy of those needs. And if you don't have a need yet, then just sit with the not knowing. Sit with, I don't know what my need is. That's okay. But if you do know what you think you need, then just sit with that energy and see what happens as you just acknowledge that need for yourself. You're really needing cooperation. You're really needing ease. And coming to yourself with that same kind of gentle, warm energy. And from that place of just being with your needs, ask yourself another question. What could you do right now to move towards addressing the needs in a way that does not require the other person to do anything differently? I'm going to read the question again. What could you do to move towards addressing your need in a way that does not require the other person to do anything differently? This is the flipping the script part. The way we've been educated is we think that the only way we're going to get our need met is for the other person to change their behavior. And so we do everything we can to try to improve them or modify them or to straighten them out or educate them or whatever words you want to use to try to get them to be different. And we see the results in our own lives of the kind of disconnection that can create. It's not that that doesn't work all the time, or it's not even a useful strategy to pursue sometimes. It's just sometimes it's a dead end. It's a dead end in terms of our own power. We cannot control what another person does, but we can control what we do, or at least we can strongly influence what we do. What could you do that could contribute to your own needs in a way that does not require the other person to do anything differently? Here comes an example, just in case you're like, what the heck is Jim talking about? Remember, I'm doing this thing with the toothbrush and all that with my kid. So what I come up with as I sit with my needs is my needs are around ease, cooperation, and fun. I would really like bedtime ritual to become a fun thing. So as I sit with these needs, what comes up for me is I remember that I have a clown nose that I used at a previous Halloween. I know exactly where it is. I go on and get the clown nose, and I put it on my nose. And I have this other thought that comes to me of getting a silly brush, like a big back rubbing brush, and a bucket. And I put my clown nose on, and I go out to where my kid is sitting doing their iPad or watching the movie or whatever, and I've got my clown act all ready to go, and I start playing. I say, I can't figure out how to brush my teeth. This brush won't fit into my mouth. Help, help. Can somebody please help me figure out how to brush my teeth? And then I'm hoping that this will encourage the kid to enter into play with me, that they can teach me how to brush my teeth by showing me how they're brushing theirs. So I'm just trying to keep it fun and light, and they don't have to do anything different. If this doesn't work, I'm not going to be attached to it working. I'll just redo the process again. and try something else. But this is what comes up for me to try. It's something different than what I would normally do. My script would normally be to scream and yell, threaten, take away privileges, punish, whatever it is. But what I'm going to do this time is I'm going to do this. I'm going to follow my needs, and I'm going to take responsibility for meeting them. So you might need some support in doing this for yourself, so I'm going to put you back into small groups to kind of explore how could you rewrite the script? What's the step you could take that would be a different script so that you'll have at least gotten a little bit of empathy, and you might have an idea that you could try in this real-life situation in your own life that's based on your needs and it doesn't require the other person to do anything. And I'd love to debrief this with you, find out what it was like for you to do this. So consider for a moment what needs of yours were met by this practice of exploring how to flip the script in your own life. And if you'd just like to express anything about any needs met by doing that, I'd love to hear as many voices as possible about needs met from this.
The need that was met for me was validation for the need that I had in the scenario I gave.
Yeah, to really be seen for the beauty of the need that you have. And also hearing a definite need met for support by finding a partner that was really able to support you in a way that worked for you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any other needs met that people want to report?
A need for hope and renewed enthusiasm was quite well met, and surprisingly so, in a situation that I had experienced quite a bit of despair and stuckness. So thank you.
Thank you. And your microphone is live.
You know, as you were going through the exercise, I had a new piece of insight. And the key word for me was respect. And that was the need that wasn't being met. You know, it was very interesting for me to reframe that in a way. I've kind of stepped away from it, I thought, in many ways. But there was still some energy there. So did bring it up, and it brought it up in a new picture and a new way of looking at it. So I appreciate this exercise. It was really quite powerful. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate hearing your story. Your microphone is live.
I really appreciated this exercise and a reminder that I can give myself self-empathy with some warmth and acknowledging the needs that I feel I'm not receiving response to, and that I can take care. It frees me to think about how I can help myself.
Yeah, very empowering, isn't it?
Yes.
And let's see here. Next on the list, your microphone is live.
Yes, I also really appreciate this. My partner has helped me to really find my feelings of feeling scared, feeling shocked, and I wasn't able to see that. And once I heard that, then I was able to give myself compassion.
Thank you. And thank you for demonstrating through your words a point that now I can perfectly make that relates both of these two exercises together. I'm celebrating what I'm hearing as empathic support that several of you received here. And so I want to go tie that into the hand model. So imagine that you take your own hand and turn it so now you see the back of your hand, but it's still in this fist form with the thumb in the inside. And then imagine that your other hand comes behind it and wraps another person's four fingers around your four fingers. So that's what empathy is. Empathy is when another person comes in and uses their NVC skills and consciousness, their prefrontal cortex, their heart, and they resonate with what's going on in your nervous system, literally wrapping their nervous system in a warm blanket of support around your nervous system. So they're loaning you their skills of empathy in that moment that awaken the connections that are already in your brain for self-empathy in that very moment. This is the power of an empathy buddy or any kind of empathic experience where one person can listen in a deep, loving, non-judgmental way to another person. You're literally matching and mirroring nervous systems, and your empathy is supporting the person who needs empathy. And it's going the other way, too. It's one of those hungry duck situations where it's hard to tell who the beneficiary is and who the giver is, because both people are benefiting in a holistic way in that moment of empathy. There's no cost. No cost to empathy. So thank you for helping us get that out. Next, your microphone's live.
I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you, Jim, for putting on these calls that reach so many of us and really enlighten us and wake us up and being present in our bodies and realizing the power that we have. I think most of all, what I am taking away from today's call is the responsibility that also lies within my hands, and I feel empowered instead of victimized, I guess, to certain situations as a parent, whether it's lack of support or, you know, just different resources that I may have or may not have available in the moment. And so just really helped me get clarity on what my needs are, which is, you know, your example was so close to home with ease and most of all connection for me with my children, and just really giving me that space to have a change in strategy and for those hard moments that can be just as simple as bedtime routine. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Your microphone is live.
Clarity was the word that came up for me, and just understanding, going through the process of conflict or situation, and then to be able to come back around to some humor, to not be caught up in feelings that are not serving me, handle the situation with some lightness and empathy for both myself and the other party. Always helpful to go through the process and get the hurt part out. There's a part, you know, is threatening on some level when we're not, you know, greeted with what we might expect. But when I go through the process, I'm not attached.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience and tying back in that point that I made early in the call about expectation and how this is a way of working with our unconscious expectations. Sometimes we're not aware of these expectations until they're not met, and that's when we flip our lid. And so this is a way of actually being able to utilize those moments as a chance to practice navigating conflict in the service of connection. So I'm glad you brought that word back in to tie that loose end up for me. And that actually clears the board. I want to just make a little space now to see if there's any questions that remain, about anything that we've covered today.
Not as clear as I'd like to be about the center of the hand is the old reptilian brain.
Yeah, the oldest part of our nervous system. Some people call it the reptilian brain, or it's a little clearer just to call it like the brain stem or something like that. Yeah, that's the center part of the hand. That's right.
And then when you put the thumb over the center, that's the mammalian brain?
Yep, I like to call it my cat brain because I love cats. But it's the part of the brain that has to do with memory and relation, and the limbic system is in there, and the amygdala, and many of our more complex emotional responses live in that part of the brain. One way of looking at it is the deeper you go into the brain, the older those structures are, and the more we share those structures with all other beings on the planet, all other animals. So the part in the core of our brain is very, very, very similar to the same part of the brain of a centipede or a cockroach or a grasshopper or anything. That these parts of the brain are so deep and so old, and it's almost like at the level of hardware of the body. It's not really changeable. And then the mammalian part, that's obviously more like a random access memory on a computer. It's changeable. You can change your memories. If you don't like a memory, just start telling a story a different way, and pretty soon you'll start remembering it the new way, because memory is very plastic. Our relationships, the way we frame our relationships with others is very plastic. It's easy to change with inner work. And that's that mammalian part of the brain.
Given that's a mammalian part of the brain, and it sort of governs relationship, that therefore then relationship can be changeable.
They are changeable, but it's not where the government is happening. The governing of that is all coming from the prefrontal cortex. It's kind of rooted in the mammalian part of the brain because of memory and the limbic attachments, limbic bonds, and so forth. But the governing part, the part that's regulating in a human brain, is coming from the cerebral cortex. And that's why things like mindfulness practice, NVC, stuff like that, really can support healthier relationships, because it's building and strengthening the connections between the cerebral cortex and those deeper structures in the brain.
Thank you.
Great. Well, then I'm going to check out with the delight that I feel having shared my afternoon with you, and that you all chose to share some time with me. So I leave the call with a sense of delight and warmth and gratitude that you all are here, and glad to hear how it supported you as well. Appreciate you all being here. Aloha, everybody. Bye-bye.